Hi, and welcome to Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. I'm Chris Garlock with this week's selection of highlights from the Labor Radio Podcast Network, 60 labor radio and podcast shows that focus on working people's issues and concerns. This week's show focuses on the attacks on one of the most popular institutions in America, the U.S. Postal Service.
But Trump, he understands that the people want to vote him out of office. So he's doing everything he can to suppress the mail. They've already removed countless amount of voting machines from different districts that would vote, you know, Democratic in the upcoming elections. But now you're suppressing votes through the mail. So they're sabotaging the delivery of the mail. They know exactly what they're doing, and this is calculated.
That's Cindy Hayward, legislative director for Local 89 of the American Postal Workers Union, on The Rick Smith Show this week.
You know, the old saying goes, don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today, because it's not like the mail goes away.
Bill Cook, president of the Northeastern New York Branch 358 of the National Association of Letter Carriers, sets the record straight on Union Strong, the podcast from the New York State AFL-CIO.
Not only is the USPS going to deliver all the absentee and the voting by mail in the general in November, but it also delivers things like prescriptions and other really key things to areas that might not be as profitable for a more traditional for-profit delivery company like a FedEx.
On Labor Radio on KBOO, hosts Michael Cathcart and Elliot Gilliland explain how President Trump's authoritarian attack on mail-in voting in the post office is, at its core, an attack on working people.
The same person that's complaining about mail-in ballots is the same person that admits that he mails his own ballot in. It only becomes corrupt when it's everybody else's ballot or when things don't look good for him in the polls.
On the Building Bridges radio show, New York Metro Area Postal Union President Jonathan Smith says our right to vote was enshrined in blood, and we can't let Trump kill the Postal Service and sabotage our election by taking away our right to vote by mail.
Congress must provide $25 billion in immediate COVID-related relief. Postal Management Service cuts must be stopped and reversed. The Postal Service must work with us to reassure the public that vote by mail is a safe and secure way to vote in November's elections.
Postal Workers Demands on the Workers Beat radio show. Plus, we've got two Postal Service-related labor history items this week.
There's going to be a lot of mail on the workroom floor before this beat is through.
The Postal Views podcast remembers the Great Postal Strike of 1970 and on Labor History in 2.
It's been the most dramatic confrontation between industry and organized labor in 2 decades.
Rick Smith remembers the Teamsters' successful strike against UPS in 1997. That's all ahead on this week's edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, bringing you working people's voices. Here's the show.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about, and here to share some thoughts on what's going on at the post office and what we can possibly do. I've asked Cindy Hayward to come talk with us. She's APWU Philadelphia Local 89's Legislative Director. Cindy, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick, for inviting me.
So we're hearing all these stories. We're hearing stories of the Postal Service taking corner mailboxes away. They're destroying sorting machines. There's all of this stuff out there. How much of this is accurate? How much of it do you know is going on? And why do you think it's going on?
Since Trump appointed new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, there's been a lot of changes in the organization starting from the top. He has removed the two top executives. He reorganized 23 others in different positions. the Postmaster General. He's been put into position by Trump to help dismantle the Postal Service. And it isn't a secret. Everything is out in the open. What's going on? They are trying to sabotage the upcoming election. 671 of our sorting machines are being removed prior to this election, when we have essential workers that are out because of the coronavirus. And by him cutting down the overtime hours and removing blue mailboxes and all the sorting machines, they're setting us up to fail.
When you look at the places where they took those, they're taking those, those sorting machines from. It seems to be, and maybe it's just coincidence, but it seems to be pretty good sized urban areas, places like Philadelphia, places like Detroit. It seems like this is targeted. Now, maybe this is just where the machines are, but it seems to me that it's targeted.
Well, you're absolutely right. It is targeted. We're aware that they're targeting Democratic communities. But Trump, he understands that the people want to vote him out of office. So he's doing everything he can to suppress the mail. They've already, removed countless amount of voting machines from different, districts that are predominantly, that will vote, Democratic in the upcoming elections. But now you're suppressing votes through the mail. So he knows what they're sabotaging the delivery of the mail. They know exactly what they're doing, and this is calculated.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So let me ask you this. I hear this a lot. The Postal Service is, it's losing money. What we've been told is, everyone's going online stuff. We don't need the old Postal Service.
Well, that's so far from the truth. First of all, the post office is what knits America together. It's the fabric of America. And the Postal Service is an affordable rate. We deliver to every address in the nation. No other agency, corporation, no one else will be able to handle what the Postal Office handles at this rate. We deliver to 48% of the world's mail through the United States. The Postal Service had a lame duck Congress in 2006 that put a burden on the Post Office that required us to prepay 75 years in advance for people that haven't even been born yet. And there's no other federal agency or private company that's required to have such a burden on them. It's all about greed, and it's not about giving service to the people. And if they were to privatize the Postal Service, then everyone that's living in these rural areas and different places, they would not have affordable mail, nor would they probably have delivery of the mail like they're getting now.
Right.
So they wouldn't even get the service. So the Postal Service is doing fine if we didn't have that burden on us. That's the 95% of the problem is that mandate that was placed on top of the post office that we're trying. That's another issue that we're trying to remove. But in spite of that, because of coronavirus, trillions of dollars were giving to other private companies. And here's the post office belongs to the people. We need $25 billion in order for us to continue, in order for us to even be able to upcoming November debate to deliver these extra maybe 80 million ballots. And right now, 46 states are saying, we're already saying, USPS is already saying that we might not be able to deliver these ballots on time.
Right.
So it's a lot going on right now, but the Postal Service, we're thriving. And there are other things that we want to introduce, like postal banking. We're in every community. It's over 31,000 retail offices. So the Postal Service is there to serve the people, but they would like to change it because it's all about the Benjamins.
Last question I've got. What do we want people to do? I mean, this is a moment for me of action. This is now time to get involved.
Right.
You can't be sitting on the sideline. What's Cindy telling people to do?
Well, what we need people to do is call their two senators. Please call them at 844-402-1001. And they can also go to hashtag Save the Post Office. And they can go to that website and they'll give them more information and about calling the senators. But we really want to push the senators in passing this HEROES Act that includes the $25 billion, which will go towards the Postal Service.
It is absolutely what we need to do. Cindy, I appreciate the time. Great talk with you. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again soon.
I would love to. Hopefully it'll be better news.
Well, let's hope. Thank you so much, Cindy Hayward. She's the legislative director there for APWU. Local 98 there in Philadelphia. This is, again, as I've said, one of these moments where it's time to get involved, time to get active. Pretty simple stuff. If you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go for the podcast, The Rick Smith Show app.
Rick Smith Show.
Thanks so much.
Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
For the New York State AFL-CIO, I'm Darcy Wells, and this is Union Strong. The United States Postal Service, by far the public's favorite agency in the federal government, is under attack just weeks before the 2020 general election. Because of COVID-19, the Postal Service is expected to handle an unprecedented number of mail-in ballots, and this at a time when the new Postmaster General is laying out a broad restructuring plan that includes cutting overtime that some say is designed to cripple the institution. It's all put the U.S. Postal Service in the middle of a firestorm. To talk about all of this is the president of the Northeastern New York Branch 358 of the National Association of Letter Carriers, Bill Cook. Bill, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Good afternoon, Darcy, and thank you for having me on.
And I should also point out, Bill's also the director of legislation for the New York State Association of Letter Carriers. So, Bill, you represent how many unionized letter carriers?
In the state of New York, we represent about 25,000.
But you've got a new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. Can you talk about what he's proposed as far as changes to the Postal Service, and what have those changes resulted in?
He has instituted a sharp reduction in overtime in all crafts. The people who are at work, who had been working 12 to 14 hours a day, he's now trying to clamp down on that and not allowing those same people to work more than 8 hours a day. So it is slowing the delivery of mail down from what America is used to.
Some people suggesting that that's deliberate. What do you think?
It is a deliberate move on his part. And he says it's to reduce cost. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the old saying goes, don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today, because it's not like the mail goes away. We don't have enough people working, And they're not hiring enough people to work. So I think every employer would like to reduce overtime if at all possible, but you've also got to deliver your services and your commitment and promise to America to deliver the mail.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously do not want the mail to slow down, and we do not want to have equipment unnecessarily removed from the processing plants.
So how confident are you that the Postal Service can handle this with these upcoming elections?
We anticipate there will be an increased interest in voting by mail for the November election.
Sure, yeah.
The number that is being touted by others is 160 million pieces of mail.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a small fraction of our work. If we're doing 1.3 billion a day, 160 million over the course of 4 to 6 weeks, we can do it without any problem at all.
I know you're not on the Board of Elections, you're with the Postal Service, but everyone's not going to just get a ballot in the mail. There's some states, I guess, do that, but not everyone. Like, if you are not comfortable going to a polling place, you want to plan ahead, particularly if mail service is slowed down, to request that mail-in ballot, right?
That's right. And our ballots in New York State are still absentee ballots by request by the voter for every election. We are still a very restricted state as opposed to others who have automatic all vote by mail.
I don't think any of us are going to be waking up the day after the general election and know the results of the election, that's for sure. You've got a plan, and you've got a plan ahead. We heard Bill talking about the mail delivery delay, and if there's really an attempt to sabotage the Postal Service and have there be these delays, then people have to plan for that. It's not that you can't rely on it or don't use it. Just know that you need to plan for more time. You've already been out there on social media supporting the Postal Service. So just want to remind people that they can do that as well by sharing what we're sharing and the messages that we have out there as well. This has been a production of the New York State AFL-CIO. Our president is Mario Salento. Our secretary treasurer is Terry Melvin. We're a federation of 3,000 unions representing 2.5 million union members, retirees, and their families with one goal: to raise the standard of living and quality of life of all working people. We keep New York State unions strong by fighting for better wages, better benefits, and better working conditions. For more information on the labor movement in New York, visit NYSAFLCIO.org. Until next time, stay union and stay strong.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Thank you for joining us. Just before we jump into our show, the main content of our show tonight, we'd just like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. So be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And yeah, you can find old episodes of this show as well as many other labor-focused and worker-focused podcasts from around the country. For this week's episode, we are going to be talking about the United States Postal Service and basically the direct attack that is being waged against them by the Trump administration and by congressional Republicans.
Absolutely. It's also super crucial for lots of small businesses for reasons that we'll get into later in the show.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, it's super essential for rural Americans.
Yeah.
Not only is the USPS going to deliver all the absentee and the voting by mail in the general in November, but it also delivers things like prescriptions and other really key things to areas that might not be as profitable for a more traditional for-profit delivery company like a FedEx or something like that. So,
interestingly enough, the post office, not only do they provide exactly what Elliot was just saying, but they also are a source of banking for certain rural communities. They allow you to cash treasury checks and to issue money orders for people who do not have access to regular banking services, be that because they live in an area without one or because they don't have a bank account, things like that.
Yeah.
So the post office is an essential service that not only is an essential service because of the things we mentioned, but also because it is laid out specifically in the Constitution. And yeah, the right for Congress to establish post offices is written into Article 1, Section 8, Clause 7 of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a fundamental, essential right of all Americans to have the post office.
Yeah, and honestly, they used to do a lot more
in
terms of the postal banking.
Yeah.
So back in the 60s and the earlier parts of the 20th century, there was a lot more going on there, which I think we'll touch on. But to kind of talk about the current state of things and then maybe go into how exactly we got here.
Yeah.
But basically, pre-pandemic, the USPS was under huge threat, mostly from a 2006 law called the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act.
Yep.
But basically, the pandemic has threatened the very survival of the USPS. And the National Association of Letter Carriers, or the union, obviously, that supplies the workforce for the USPS, it's headed up by a man named Frederick Rowland. And he basically has come out multiple times and talked about the dire need of additional funding for the Postal Service, and basically alluded to the fact that pre-pandemic, there were obviously a ton of problems, but basically skyrocketing kind of package volume in May from the coronavirus actually has helped kind of prop up some of the really bad financial situations that the USPS is in.
Right.
And the reason that they're in this state is obviously going back to that 2006 law that we mentioned earlier, the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act. And basically what that act did was require the USPS to prepay healthcare benefits for retirees on a 50-year schedule. So basically do it hugely in advance. So on this show, obviously we're big fans of healthcare benefits for workers.
Yep.
But in this case, this 2006 law was done in a way to kind of handicap it.
Yep.
The USPS is obviously in a unique situation in that it, while it is a federal institution, it's supposed to be profitable.
Right.
In
it
that
does
it's
run a profit. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not paid for by taxpayers. Well, and previously, before now, as it's run up debt, things are different. But basically, over the first 10 years after that 2006 bill, so from 2007 to 2017, it basically, the USPS was required to pay $5 billion a year into this healthcare benefit plan that's forecasting 50 years out.
Right. And so not only does that mean that they're putting money towards the retirement benefits for people who are, you know, just starting out and for people who are, you know, going to be soon to be future workers. But because of the timeline of that, it requires that they put money into post-retirement funds for people who are not even born yet, for future employees who have not even been born at the time they're funding this. So there is no other federal agency or private corporation that is that is any requirement like this. So the Institute for Policy Studies actually found in a 2019 study that had the retiree healthcare mandate been removed, you know, and not been put in place in 2006, the post office would have continued operating and reporting profits since 2013 all the way through 2019. That is all the time we have. Thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Ellie Gilland.
Have a great day.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1997. That was the day that a strike by the Teamsters Union against UPS ended with a victory for the union. The strike had started 15 days earlier. More than 180,000 UPS workers participated in the action. It was the first nationwide strike by UPS workers. At the time, UPS delivered 80% of all packages in the United States. The company, known for its signature brown trucks, delivered 12 million packages a day. The key issue of the strike was that the company increasingly relied on part-time workers. The insecurities of part-time work were growing, not just at UPS, but for workers in industries all across the country. The strike settlement came with the union winning its core issues. The company agreed to convert 10,000 part-time jobs to full-time positions over the course of the next 5 years. The victory was significant for the U.S. labor movement. The 1980s and 1990s saw new attacks on labor unions and working people, starting with President Ronald Reagan's breaking of the air traffic controller union strike in 1981. The UPS victory in a national strike with broad rank-and-file support encouraged working people beyond the Teamsters Union. Announcing the settlement of the strike, ABC News anchor Peter Jennings declared, quote, "It's been the most dramatic confrontation between industry and organized labor in 2 decades. Teamsters President Ron Kerry said, quote, "It's what this country needs. Decent jobs, a chance for the dream, a chance to purchase a home, a chance to bring your children up properly, a chance to send them to college. Enough is enough, and it's about time that people start fighting back on this."
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
Now, Jonathan Smith, president of the New York Metro Area Postal Workers Union, insists we won't allow Trump to use this horrific pandemic as an opportunity to bankrupt and privatize the United States Postal Service and sabotage our right to vote, which was enshrined in blood, and steal this election.
Why don't we begin? I was awoken. I get up to barraging myself with the news, and the first thing that I hear is Donald Trump's complaints against mail-in voting, doubts about whether or not the person whose name is on the ballot actually cast the vote, and whether or not the ballot was tampered with after it was sent. So as a member of the Postal Service, how do you begin to direct yourself to that specific comment by Donald Trump?
The same person that's complaining about mail-in ballots is the same person that admits that he mails his own ballot in. It only becomes corrupt when it's everybody else's ballot or when things don't look good for him in the polls. The postal workers, when we talk about mail, we don't talk about ballots. We're concerned about the elderly getting their medicine. Now in the middle of this pandemic, we have a great unemployment situation and people need their unemployment checks. People are getting bills and they can't afford to get charged for their bills being late only because the mail was being late. I tell the people that I represent, let's stay focused on our mission and what we can control. And we don't worry about Trump and Mr. DeJoy, the new Postmaster General, trying to politicize us. We don't deliver Democratic mail. We don't deliver Republican mail. We deliver all the mail. And that's where we're going to stay focused at.
Trump keeps on talking about this extra $25 billion that the Democrats want to apportion to help the post office during the pandemic, plus you're losing money because of that, and also another $3 billion, which would help, I think, would be the states with regard to mail-in ballots. So what is your response to that? Why are these funds necessary now?
It's necessary because Trump, the polls do not look good, and he's trying to set the stage to challenge the election and the validity of the election. The Postal Service doesn't collect any tax dollars from any of the citizens, and we continue to do the job. What makes the Postal Service any different than any other business that has been affected during the COVID pandemic? You had no problem finding $500 billion for these corporations, but you can't find $25 billion for the Postal Service? Trump has a problem not with the Postal Service. Trump has a problem with the truth.
What are your thoughts as a member of a mighty union and a mighty service that's been provided for this country about the new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy?
Mr. DeJoy, in my research of his history, one, he has never worked in a union shop. Two, he has a conflict of interest because of his investments in not only UPS but other trucking industries that is in competition with the post office. So we know that his agenda is that he's going to make money from both sides. He's only beholden to one man, not just about affecting the election. This is about their plans, is about ultimately wanting to privatize the Postal Service and take a service away from the American people. Why is he not concentrating on increasing the viability of the Postal Service instead of destroying the Postal Service with false facts and innuendos that he has not been able to support with any evidence whatsoever that the Postal Service is past its time and that we cannot complete the task? But I'm here to assure you that it does not matter what Mr. DeJoy does, it does not matter what Mr. Trump does, because the postal workers are dedicated. We take our job very seriously. We just hope that the public say we can't control what Mr. DeJoy does, and we can't control what Mr. Trump feels. But what we can control, if you get your ballot in early, we take it personal, not who you vote for, but to make sure that your vote is counted. And we will continue to do our job to make sure that your ballot is processed and sent back to wherever it's supposed to be sent to, so your voice can be heard.
And speaking to Jonathan Smith, president of the New York Metro Area Postal Union. I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash, and you've been listening to Building Bridges. Stay strong, stay well.
This is Gene Lance on the Workers Beat Extra. Here's what came from Mark Diamondson, who is the national president of the American Postal Workers Union. Here are the demands. Congress must provide $25 billion in immediate COVID-related relief. Postal Management Service cuts must be stopped and reversed. The Postal Service must work with us to reassure the public that vote by mail is a safe and secure way to vote in November's elections. Now I want to turn to the elections, because I am starting to hear more and more from certain younger people that they don't plan to vote, or that they plan to throw away their vote, or that they are just generally dissatisfied with the whole election process. And this made me think of the days that passed when we had certain ideologies that basically were against elections. There have been a lot of labor people in American history that were opposed to elections. The industrial workers of the world, for example, did not believe in participating in the elections. Hippies don't participate in elections, and anarchists don't participate in elections, or often don't participate in elections. So it occurs to me to try to think through the ideology as why is it that they don't want to participate in elections? And the answer is simple. Hippies and anarchists do not believe in any long struggle to change society. Hippies believe that they can just change their own lives and get with a few friends and just live differently and they don't have to change society, or that society will change from their example, that they are doing such a great example that other people will just copy them. It's nonsense. It's called utopian socialism. But hippies will probably just ignore the elections because, generally speaking, they ignore society in general and just try to live in their own world. But you can see why it appeals to people who are affluent, people who don't really have to worry about working and making a living and feeding their kids, people who are getting plenty of money from their parents, believe that they can just live this idyllic life and other people will somehow copy them. Now, anarchists are different. Hippies don't like anarchists, and anarchists don't like hippies. So it's peculiar that they both have a similar attitude of not participating in elections. The anarchists believe that what they have to do is just wake everybody up. Now, they don't have a commitment to a long, hard struggle to change people a few at a time or many at a time. They don't believe in big mass demonstrations. They believe in some kind of a spark, something that will just wake everybody up. And the trick for them is to try to find the right spark. And unfortunately for them, and unfortunately for us, their idea of a spark sometimes turns to wanton violence, which doesn't work for anybody in the kind of society that we're in right now as we try to go forward. Both the hippies and anarchists believe everything is going to be great without a long period of struggle. This interprets into the elections in that the hippies and anarchists will be telling people, don't vote. Or throw away your vote. Don't pay any attention to it. Labor's position is that working people have a great stake in everything that happens, including elections. You may or may not believe that electoral work is the most important arena of work. I personally don't believe it is the most important thing. I think that organizing is the most important thing. But whether you believe elections are the most important thing or not, you still have to concede that they are very important and that they make a great deal of difference in the lives of working families. So the labor's position is yes, go and vote. This is Gene Lance on the Workers Beat Extra.
Darling, I love you, but give me postal views.
Audible ready in an evolving workplace. On the postal planet.
Gator on.
Welcome, all the listeners from around the world, to Postal Views Podcast number 80, titled USPS Remembers 1970. One of my favorite labor leaders of all time was A. Philip Randolph, founding president of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters and former AFL-CIO vice president, who quoted, "We must develop huge demonstrations because the world is used to big dramatic affairs. They think in terms of hundreds of thousands and millions and billions. Billions of dollars are appropriated at the twinkling of an eye. Nothing little counts," unquote. In this podcast, you'll attend my rally with fictional guest speaker, Mr. Red, reminding the labor force to never forget the working conditions and kind of thinking that led to a 1970 strategy representing a period in postal time. The baton was passed on to the next generations to keep the postal labor struggle through continuous progress.
There's going to be a lot of mail on the workroom floor before this beat is through. Most of all, I hope the message rings true postal blue. Since the 1970 Reorganization Act, there's been a cordial reunion. Management bound the workforce through organized communion. Decades later in the 21st century, the Postal Service is still one great big family. You have no option but to continue moving the unionized workforce forward. Keep looking toward new business revenue and stepping up the organized labor venue. Let me give you a feeling about the great postal coup. When I get this vision in my panoramic sights, you know I got some verbiage to write. In 1970, the damage was done. Now management's making billions off labor chores. Think back to the millions of souls who've gone through those post office doors. Progress requires growth on the product line. Any item in decline from the sign of the time, replace with something better for the American public with the drop of a dime. Service disruption and nonsensical cuts won't help the company survive. Our partners and clients see right through that slowdown jive. Organized labor should never be messed with. All blessed on every shift plot to conquer and divide and see what they decide. Delivery to every household and business is a must. Doubt and no trust from the bosses and the workforce begin to fuss. Sister and brothers, don't diss one another because the customer is ultimately the one that suffers. Please remember all sorts of occasions all the time. The great postal strike gave the postal workforce a new historic timeline. Every March 18th, remember the day as one of unity. Use your postal connects across the land to celebrate the line of duty. Display your pride for what the postal ancestors did to protect your hide. Postal leaders, put more time on the movement meter. Turn up the tweeters. Tweet, tweet. Call sister unions to join in the remembrance. And show off the solidarity stance.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. Just a small sample of the amazing programs aired recently on 60 labor radio and podcast shows across the country. They're all part of the Labor Radio Podcast network of shows that focus on working people's issues and concerns. We've got links to all the network shows at laborradionetwork.org, and you can also find them by using the hashtag LaborRadioPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. For Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, this is Chris Garlock, urging you to stay active and, of course, stay tuned to your local Labor Radio Podcast show. Labor Radio Podcast Weekly was edited by Evan Papp of the Empathy Media Lab, a production house, artist studio, and an event space here in Washington, D.C., with a focus on labor, political economy, art, and culture. Find out more at empathymedialab.com. This week's show was produced and mixed by me. Our social media guru is Harold Phillip, and you can always reach us at laborradionetwork.org.